All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yudchet Amud Bet, four lines from the bottom. The Gemara is discussing the question that was raised by Rova, which is, by Rova, Yesh ha'adad l'tzorot, ein ha'adad l'tzorot. Is there a possibility of moving tzorot from whatever level it starts at to a higher level? Do we, l'keren midaminin la? It's similar to keren. And since in being similar to keren, just like by keren, you start with chatzi nezek, and after hadah, after three times, it turns into full tashlum, or a requirement to pay nezek shalem. Or maybe it's just a derivative of regel, and in regel it makes no difference how many times you do it, it's always kuruchayu, and therefore nothing changes by the mere fact that you are doing it over and over again, because that is the natural way, or that is what you are expected to do. So you chatzi nezek tzorot, but because it's regel, therefore, it's considered to be normal. And the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim says you pay half, even though it's normal. But that means you can't change anything here, because structurally, this is the fact that it's the normal way for it to behave. It does it one time or 10 times, it's the same thing. You still pay chatzi nezek. Or do you say it's similar to keren? Keren, whereby chatzi nezek, it was a dispensation of some sort, or it was a reduction in the payment. But if you do it enough times, then we move it up to nezek shalem. So same thing over here, by tzorot. Would you say the same thing, that it's dome le karen because it starts out at chatzi nezek? If you do it enough times, then you move it up to nezek shalem.
Tosafot back on Yudchet Amud Aleph said the question not only applies to a case of tzorot kedarkam, but even a case of shinui, which we're going to see upcoming in the Gemara, some of the proofs that Tosafot brings. But he says both questions are answered in the same manner, which is, question is asked in both instances, im yesh hada olav, is there a possibility of becoming muad? If there's a possibility of creating a mu'ad through regular tzorot, then the same thing will apply when it's a case of shinoi that's layered on top of the tzorot. Because the hada'ah is associated with keren, and therefore, if there is hada'ah by normal case of tzorot, because you're comparing it to keren, then certainly in a case of shinoi that would be the case. If you say that there's no way to graduate it up when it's a normal case of tzorot, then there'll be no difference also when you do it in a manner of shinui. How could it be that you're going to end up paying more when you do it in an unusual manner, because you can have a mu'ad, versus the case when you do it in a normal manner, and you only pay half nezek there?
That would be the question. It also might here depend on whether we look at the animal or do we look at the nezek that's being done. I mean, do we look at the type of nezek that's done or do we look at the nature of the animal?
Or in essence, do we see that the animal status has not changed, doing the same behavior it did before, therefore there should be no difference in the din? Or do we say that becoming a mu'ad changes your obligation? You're right, the animal's activity or behavior hasn't changed. But the mere fact that it's done it a number of times now makes you obligated or responsible for nezek shalem. Maybe that applies even if there's no status change in the animal.
That might play into what Rava's question is about. So that's the question that we saw what was posed by Rava. And then, Mayer says, four lines up, Tashma. Tatani Rami bar Yechezkel, Tanagol shol shit rosho davir klei zuchukit. A chicken stuck its head into a glass utensil. Vitakabo, and he let out a nice squawk. Bishavaro, and he broke it. Mishalem nezek shalem. So he pays full for that. Vamra Yosef, Ami Beirab, Sus Shitzanach. If you have a horse that neighs, you have a chamor shiner, or you have a donkey that brays, Shiberet HaKelim, and that causes the utensils to break. Mishalem chatzi nezek. You only pay half nezek. So seemingly you were talking about different animals making noise and causing damage to that noise. Rav Yosef Ami Beirab says that it is chatzi nezek. The Rami Bar Chezkel says that it is nezek shalem, my love. So what's the story here? Kegon davad tlat zimne. The machloket here revolves around whether it was done 3 times or not. Ubehaka miflege. This is the machloket. Mar sever yesh ha'adah, or mar sever ein ha'adah. It's exactly the machloket. After 3 times, does it make a difference? Are you still chatzi nezek tzorot and remains half payment? Or does it now jump up to nezek shalem? And that's how we explain the difference in the braito. Tosafot over here makes a note of the fact that here they are quoting Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Beirav. They're arguing on a braito that was Tani Rami Bar Yechezkel. So now you have Amoraim arguing on a braito, which is a little difficult. So Tosafot has to reach a little bit and say, it's named Beirav. It was said in the Beit Midrash of Rav, which means it came from Rav, and we know that Rav is a Tano Upolig. That sometimes Rav is given that position of Tano, and therefore you can argue on a Breita. That's one way that Tosafot solves the problem. The other one is to say that the Breita quoted here is Tani Rami Bar Chezkel. It's not a Breita of Rabbi Shaya or Rabbi Chia, whose Breitot were considered to be efficacious or have a certain amount of veracity to them that if they're brought in the Gemara, Amora can't argue on them. This Breita, since it doesn't come from those Batei Midrashot, is more questionable in its origins, and therefore even an Amora could argue on that Breita. So the Gemara says, no, that's not the way to explain it. Well, Bechad Zimno, it's on the first time. Uploto de Sumchos Rabbanan Kamiflege. They're paralleling the machloket that we had between Sumchos and the Rabbanan, whether Chatzi Nezek Tzororot is Chayav Chatzi Nezek or Nezek Shalem. So the Breita that says Nezek Shalem is like Sumchos, who says that it's Nezek Shalem. The other Breita is Chatzi Nezek is according to the Rabbanan, who say that Tzororot is Chatzi Nezek. Va'mishunehu. So the Gemara takes a step back and says, wait a minute. For the chicken to stick its head into a kli and then give a big squawk and have it break, that's not normal behavior. It's not normal behavior. Forget about talking about Tzororot. We're already in the world of Karen. If you're in the world of Karen, then you're already talking about either, we're going to see coming up, maybe Revia Nezek. Maybe it should be a quarter Nezek because it's Mishuna in Tzororot. Or you could simply say that this isn't even in the world of Tzororot at all. This is completely Karen. And therefore, the would be Hada if you had it three times. Plus, if it happened to Rishut Rabim, you'd be Chayav, meaning all the dinim of Karen would apply. Where it says, the Itbe Bizrane, that there was feed, or there were grains, kernels, inside of the Klei Zuchuchit. So, as Rashi notes here, you have two actions that are normal. It's normal for a chicken to go in and eat if there is something inside there. Number two is it's normal for the chicken to squawk, especially when it's eating. So now you put those two together, the whole behavior is normal. It did nothing that was out of the ordinary because you could expect both of these items to happen. Might be true for it to squawk inside of the kli by itself. That would have been mishuneh. But once there's feed inside of the kli, then he's doing what you would otherwise expect a tarnagol to do. Both actions are completely ki or chayu. They both are considered to be normal. And for that reason, this is a toleda of regel and not a toleda of keren. By Ravashi. Ravashi now queries, Yesh shinui litzorot l'revia nezek, o ein shinui litzorot l'revia nezek. So this is what I just mentioned, the possibility that once you have tzorot being chatzi nezek, that's a given, does that become the baseline? Then if you do something that is unusual, meaning that the tzorot come about because of something mishuneh, then does it take on the character of Karen, and then you pay chatzi nezek. Karen, or Tom, says chatzi nezek. So chatzinezek here would be chatzinezek of chatzinezek. It would be a half of a half or a quarter nezek. Or do we say there's no such thing as shinoi b'tzorot? Tzorot by definition is ki or chayu. And anything that comes out of tzorot will remain at chatzinezek. There's no way to reduce it down to a quarter nezek. I mean, there's always chatzinezek. No such thing as tamut and muadut by tzorot. They always exist on the plane of chatzinezek. Tifsho lemi derovo. Let us prove it from Rova's query, which we saw, both of these were actually quoted in yesterday's daf. But here, Rova queried, Dabai Rova, Yesh hada'a l'tzorot, ein hada'a l'tzorot. That was the question that we were just dealing with. From here, the Balei HaTosafot in yesterday's daf proved that Rova's scenario that he's speaking about is a case of shinui. Because otherwise, what's the Gemara trying to prove over here? They're saying Rav Ashi is speaking about a shinui, and then they bring Rava's question to prove either direction. By the mere fact that they bring Rava here means they are assuming that Rava's question relates to a case of shinui. And for that reason, on the Amud Aleph, the Balei HaTosafot over there say that the case must have been a case of shinui, and that leads to their whole shita over there, trying to then work it out with the Lashona Gemara. And the question of the girsa at the top of the Amud Bet yesterday, which is Kikamar Rablazer Nezek Shalem Kigon Diyayet or Kigon Deshani Umiyayet. The question of whether the word Shani was in there, that there was some sort of Shinui there, that's a machloket. Rashi seems to have the word Shinui in there. The Balei Tosafot don't have it. Rashi brings two different shonot. But the Balei Tosafot want to prove that the case must be a case of Shinui because of the fact that Rova, who's part of that Gemara over there, is clearly talking about a shinoi because we're bringing it as an answer to Rav Ashi. So Tifshu Lemi the Rav, the Bai Rav, Yesh Hadalut Tzorot, Ein Hadalut Tzorot. The assumption being that Rav's question is, do you pay half or you pay whole? If you pay half or you pay whole, then according to Rava, there's no question as to the fact that there's no such thing as shinui. Because if it was shinui, it would be a quarter to a half. You know, if there's a shinui, it's a quarter. If there is no shinui, then it would be a whole. So now, if Rava would have thought that you could have a quarter payment over here, Rava's question would be, if it's a tam, then it's a quarter. If it's a mu'ad, after three times, it'd be chatzi nezek. But that's not the way Rava poses his question. Rava poses his question, is there hadah or not hadah? Meaning, it starts out at chatzi nezek, and then can it be elevated to nezek shalem? So by definition, Rava sees shinui as not being an issue here by nezek tzorot, because of the nature of his question going from a half to a whole. That's only applicable when ain't shinui. Klal, de ain't shinui. That's what Rava is saying, clearly, that there is no shinui here. The Gemara says, Dilma, Rava, imtim tzolomar kamar. Rava is asking a nested question. Im tim tzolomar ein shinoi, meaning that the question begins with Ravashi's question. Yesh shinoi or ein shinoi? Im tim tzolomar, if you say ein shinoi, yesh ha'adah or ein ha'adah. If you say that there is no shinoi, does the concept of mu'ad versus tam apply over here? Obviously, if you believe there is shinoi and it goes down to a quarter, then for sure you believe there's ha'adah, because then you're entering the world of Karen, and you're saying this, tzrarot, Bitam is a chatzi of a chatzi, which is a via nezek, which also means that you can move it up, bimuat to chatzi nezek. So there would be obvious. But in the case when there is no shinoi, where tam doesn't apply there, is there still a concept of hada'ah? And that would be in the question. The Gemara leaves it as a teiku. We'll come back and discuss what we do in situations like this, where you have a teiku, because the Gemara is going to have a number of these on the daf, and then we're going to discuss how the Rishonim deal with that. Bai Ravashi, koach kocho musumchus kocho dami. Although, again, this was brought in yesterday's daf, Vashi asks, in world of Sumchus, we understand that Tzrorot pay Nezek Shalem. And that we already saw, the Gemara said, it's because Kocho Kigufo Dami. The Kocho Kigufo makes it that it's full-fledged Nezek. Since it's full-fledged Nezek, you pay Nezek Shalem. But that's true in Kocho. What happens if you have a second derivative Kocho? What's the din according to Sumchus? Mi gamir halacha. Does he have the halacha l'moshe misinai, which is appealing, because how do you have a halacha l'moshe misinai that people are arguing about? Either there is or there isn't a halacha l'moshe misinai. So if Sumchus also has the halacha l'moshe misinai, but it's a question of application, umugilah b'koach kocho, he just says it's not applicable by kocho, it's only applicable by koach kocho, it's only applicable by second derivative koach. That's where we said chatzi nezek. That's where the halacha l'moshe misinai was said. He agrees that it's kochol and koach kochol are all kugufo dami. But maybe the lach moshe misinai was said about koach kochol. That's where the lach moshe misinai came in and gave you the dispensation to pay half. Doesn't mean it's not kugufo dami. Odilma, lo gamir alocha klau. Maybe he thinks there is no alocha the moshe misinai whatsoever. And therefore koach kochol looks no different than kochol. Just like kochol is kugufo dami, so too koach kochol is also kugufo dami. So Mar leaves this once again as a teiku. As far as Sumchus' position is concerned, we don't know what the din of Koach Kocho would be according to Sumchus. So we already discussed this in the Mishnah, the difficulty of this statement in the Mishnah. The problem is Miva'etet. Miva'etet, which until this point we've seen is a Tol Adah of Karen. All of a sudden here it appears in a Mishnah that is dealing with Regel. So how do you explain this phrase in the Mishnah? So Yibailu, Heichi ka'amar. How exactly are we formulating what is said in the Mishnah? Haita miva'etet vehezika bibiuta. Is the first case a case where it did damage through its kicking? Oh, and then the second case is tzorot kerochayu. Or tzorot that are kicked out in the normal process of it walking. Mishalem chatzi nezek. And you pay chatzi nezek v'rabbonani. And it is authored by the Rabbonon, which is that chatzi nezek tzorot they're speaking about here is Chatzi Nezek, like the Rabbanan say, and the case of Biut is a regular case of Karen. And the reason it's brought down is because they're both Chayav Chatzi Nezek, and they're done by the Regel, even though the reason your Chayav is different. In the case of Biut, your Chayav because it's Karen, that's why you're Chayav Chatzi Nezek. By the case of Tzorot, you're Chayav Chatzi Nezek because of the Lacha the Moshe Misinai. The Mishnah brings both of them together because they have a common characteristics. They're both Chayav Chatzi Nezek, they're both done through the Regel. But even though they come from different avot, one from Karen, one from Regel. Odilma, or maybe the case here is, Haita miva'etet, vezika bibiuta. Then once again, it was kicking, and it damaged with its kicking, which is Karen. O tzorot machmat biut. And then the tzorot happened through the kicking. which is Mishalem Chatzi Nezek, and then you pay Chatzi Nezek. So what you're doing here is the question of the biut. Is the biut simply its own case? Or is the biut modifying or qualifying the two cases, which is there's a regular case of biut, and there's a case of biut that results in tzrarot. So obviously then you would understand why biut is brought here, even though it's not relevant to the Mishnah, it's relevant in the second case, which is a case of tzrarot. So then he would pay chatzi nezek, haki or chay. On the other hand, that means if it happened while it was normally walking and the rocks were shooting out, mishalem nezek shalem, then he would have paid full nezek. The only reason he's paying chatzi nezek here is because of the biut, that the tzrarot came about from an unusual behavior. Umani, therefore, who would be the author of our Mishnah? Sumchus. Because then in a regular case of tzrarot, you pay nezek shalem. The reason you're paying chatzi nezek here is because the biut got involved. The Karen, the Tamut, got involved here. So the Gemara says, Tashma, can you really read the Mishnah that way? Miseifa, you have the latter part of the Mishnah, says, Darsa ala kli v'shavarto. The animal steps on the kli and breaks it. And then a shard goes out from that kli and damages a second kli. On the first one, he pays nezek shalem because that's regular regel. Obviously, this has to be b'chatzer and nizak, not in reshut rabim. So therefore, your chayav, because that's body did the damage, walking normally, and he damaged the first kli. And on the second one, you pay chatzi nezek. So that's clearly the shita of the Chachamim, because you're saying that there's chatzi nezek for tzrarot. So it's very clear here that the Mishnah is authored by the Chachamim. If you want to say it's authored by Sumchus, what's he going to do with this second half of the Mishnah? Second half of the Mishnah clearly talks about chatzi nezek tzrarot, which is not the shita of Sumchus. So what do you want to say now? I'll tell you how to answer this question. To say that this case in the latter half of the Mishnah is Rishon, Rishon lahatazah, v'sheni, sheni lahatazah. We're talking about Rishon and Achron, we're not talking about first one damaged, and then the second one damaged, which would mean that the first one is damaged by the shard itself, or by the para itself, the second one by the shard that came from the first kli, but rather the Rishon and the sheni are describing the two utensils that were hit by Tzrorot. So the way that Rashi learns it, there are actually three kelim over here. He smashed the first keli. A shard went from that, smashed the second keli. And then from the second keli, a shard went out and broke the third keli. In that case, the Rishon and the Acharon over here is the Rishon HaTazah. The first one damaged by Tzorot. And the Acharon, the Sheni, is the second one damaged by the Tzorot. There was an original keli that was damaged, but we're not speaking about that. That's the way Rashi learns. If you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel says that the case here is Dalsal Evan. It stepped on a stone. Then it went and hit a kli, v'shavarto, v'od, nital shever min a kli, v'et shivarto, v'nafal a kli acher v'shavaro. According to Rabbeinu Chananel, it's a stone that hits the first kli, and then that kli has a shard that shoots out and hits the second kli. So there are only two kelim in the case there, according to Rabbeinu Chananel. According to Rashi, there are three kelim in the case. But according to both of them, the scenario is that the Rishon and the Achron that we're speaking about here, or the Rishon and the Sheni, is the first kli hit by Tzrorot, and then the second kli hit by Tzorot. So then you would set up the Mishnah as being authored by Sumchus. And how do you explain this latter half of the Mishnah? It's a case of Kocho, where he says Kocho kigufo, and Yochayav Nezek Shalem. And the second one hit by Tzorot is Koach Kocho. It's derivative of Kocho. And above, we had asked the question, and possibly that Sumchus believes by Koach Kocho, it would be Alacha the Moshe Misinai, only pay Chatzi Nezek, despite the fact that it's Kigufo. So maybe over here you'd explain the Mishnah in that way. The Gemara says, Ela, Had Debai Ravashi, Koach Kocho, the Sumchus, Kocho Dami, Ulav Kocho Dami. Therefore, if you do that, then the query that Ravashi had before, does Sumchus hold of Koach Kocho or not? Tifshalei delav kukukho dami. Here you could prove that it's different, because if Sumchus is going to be the author of our Mishnah, the only way to explain Sumchus as the author of the Mishnah is to say that koach kocho is different than kocho. And then you would have an answer to Ravashi's question. How come we left it as a teku before? If we know the authorship of our Mishnah Sumchus, we'd have an answer to the question. The Gemara says you can't prove anything from here. Ravashi kirabonon mukila ubayila hachi. Ravashi sets up the Mishnah according to the Rabbanon. So yes, the question still remains, how do you read the Mishnah? And you could have read the Mishnah like Sumchus, you could have read the Mishnah like Rabbanon, but Ravashi's question derives from the fact that he believes that the Mishnah is authored by the Chachamim. And therefore the whole scenario here doesn't lend itself to answer the question that he posed versus Kochol versus Koach Kochol, because Because this is the Rabbanan. For the Rabbanan, you're ready at Chatzi Nezek Tzorot on the first case. So of course, in Koach Kokol you are. And so for Rav Ashi, this will not be a proof for this situation of Sumchus, because Sumchus is just not the author of the Mishnah. But rather, Boi Lo Hochi, this is the question he had. Haitami ve'etet ve'zika be'biuto, od Tzorot kerochayu, Chatzi Nezek. So therefore, ha'machmat biut, the diuk you would make is if it was done bi'biut, revi'a nezek, v'yesh shinui, and therefore there is shinui by nezek tzorot. Odilma haita mi've'etet ve'zika bi'biuta, od tzorot machmat biut, chatzit ve'en shinui, teku. So over here, what he suggests is that he for sure believes that the Mishnah is authored by the Rabbanan. The question is, within the sheet of the Rabbanan, how do you read that case of biut? Is the case of biut one case of biut, one case of Chatzi Nezek Tzorot, and that's the case, implying that if it was biut by the Chatzi Nezek Tzorot, it would drop down to a quarter of Nezek, and that means Yesh Shinui, the possibility of having Shinui by Nezek Tzorot, or do you read it as the biut is modifying both things? There's regular biut, he kicks, and that's Karen and Chatzi Nezek, plus there's biut b'Tzorot, and he still pays Chatzi Nezek, which shows you that there is no Shinui b'Tzorot. And that's the question. Rashi says, Ubayu lahochi goes back to Ravashi's original question that we started with today. By Ravashi, yesh shinui l'tzorot, or ain't shinui l'tzorot? This is why his question came up. It came on this part of the Mishnah. He says, the Mishnah's the Rabbanan. Explain to me this section about biut in the Mishnah. That question about how to read it is the same question as whether there is shinui l'tzorot or ain't shinui l'tzorot. And so that's how Rashi learns it. The Rashba and others say that you can't prove anything from what Rav Ashi's question is. All we can say is once Rav Ashi says that the Mishnah's author, the Rabbanan, you can't prove anything about Sumchus. Did Rav Ashi ask this other question? Maybe, maybe not. What the Rashba says is that the Gemara says, once you already established that the Chachamim are the author of the Mishnah, then you could say in Rav Ashi that this is the question of Rav Ashi. It's not Mukhrach that that's what Rav Ashi asked, because we don't have anywhere that Rav Ashi said anything of the sort. Because Rav Ashi doesn't ask the question about biut or not biut in the Mishnah. All the Gemara is saying is, once you've set it up the Chachamim, you could say that Rav Ashi would have asked a question like this, not that this is the same as the question above. Rashi says, this is his question, and this is what Rav Ashi posed. Now then the Rashba says, you could have asked this question, it's not telling us for sure that Rav Ashi ever posed a question about our Mishnah or the way to read our Mishnah. He had a separate question above about Shinoi. Doesn't necessarily have to be connected to our Mishnah. Tosafot over here makes a point, it's just an interesting methodological point, which is that the Gemara before said that the way to read the Mishnah is either you read it this way and it's authored by the Rabbanan, or you read it this way and it's authored by Sumchus. Well then, once the Gemara reads and says that Rav Ashi believes it's written by the Rabbanan, then he would have to read the Mishnah in one way, and that's it. How come now there are two choices of how to read the Mishnah? The Gemara before assigned the two different ways to read the Mishnah to the authorship. If it's authored by the Rabbanan, you read this way. If it's authored by Sumchus, you read it this way. All of a sudden we say, Rav Ashi says it's authored by the Rabbanan, and the same question is posed again. You could read it either way. That goes against what the Gemara said before. So Tosafot says, methodologically, the Gemara is the one that did that. Meaning that the original question was how to read the Mishnah. You read it this way or that way. The Rabbanan superimposed on that and said, well, if you read it this way, it's the Rabbanan. You read it this way, it's Sumchus. But that doesn't mean the question doesn't exist outside of that framework, and that's what happened here. So the Tosafot says, either you could have said, Amatzi the Meimar Imtim Salomar. You could have set up this case by Rav Ashi as an Imtim Salomar, meaning that Imtim Salor Alav Kikocho Dami, if you say Koach Kocho is not Kikocho, Matnitin Rabbanan or Sumchus is the authorship of the Mishnah, Sumchus or Rabbanan. Either way, that Rav Ashi would not have an answer then to whether Sumchus says Koach Kocho or doesn't say Koach Kocho is different. But he says, Ela Difalei Dibai V'yesh Shinoi V'ein Shinoi. Venira de Baila El, Loita Ella, I Matnidin Ari Bitsorot, Kiorche, Edi Shinui Bitulo. The question of the Gemara, or the original question posed here, is what is the story in the Mishnah? Vashas Hosif Midato. The Gemara superimposed on that, Rabbanani O Sumchusi. Depending on which way you read it, would be Rabbanan Sumchus. Ravashi Mifaresh de Bailu, Ieshinui the Revio, Ain Shinui. Ravashi comes along and says, no. The question was not about whether it's Sumchus or Rabbanan. It's all the Rabbanan. And the question's within the Rabbanan Shita. Is there Shinoi or ain't Shinoi? So then it just methodologically, what it's saying here is that the Gemara's assumption was just that, an assumption. And therefore you can knock it away. And that's what Ravashi says. You didn't understand the question correctly. You thought the question was being posed about the way to read the Mishnah, whether Biut modifies Sorot or not. That tells you whether it's the Rabbanan or Sumchus, you were wrong. It's all the Rabbanan. And all that question means is there Shinoi or ain't Shinoi? It's interesting methodologically how the Tosafot sees that the Gemara, which seemingly takes something for granted, is not necessarily for granted. The Gemara understood the question, then tried to interpret the question a certain way. Ravashi comes along and says, you interpreted the question incorrectly. The question is still a question, but it's all within the Shita of the Rabbanan. Bamine Rabbi Ava Bar Mamel Mirabi Ami. So Rabbi Ava Bar Mamel asked Rabbi Ami. Avami lo mi Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba. Some say that he posed or queried Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba. Haita melechet b'makom shiyev. Elohim came in a tezet. Is she walking in a place where basically there's a psik reshe that if you walk here, stones are going to go flying out. There's no question that if it walks here, there are going to be stones. Just if it walks normally, there are going to be stones that fly out. But ubiata ve'tiza. Nevertheless, it did something unusual. It was bo'et. It did a biata, and then it shot the rock out. So despite the fact that it was a psik reshe that would happen anyway, the way this rock got launched was that it kicked with a biut, which is keren, because he did it intentionally. What's the din? Vezika mahu. What's the din? Kevin de ef sharla or chehu. Since there's no other way for it to walk without shooting the rocks out, then basically it's regular tzorot. I mean, it's like regel. It's a tola dav regel. And therefore it's going to be chayav chatzi nezek, and that's it. Odilma hashka mia machmat biut kamidaz da tzorot. Or do we say, but here, in reality, what happened was that the tzorot shot out because it kicked through biut. And therefore it would be a tola da of keren. And then you would pay revia nezek. Then you would pay a quarter nezek because it would be shinui b'tzrarot, and that would lead to revia nezek. That's one way to read the Gemara over here. Rashi brings then a lishna achrina, brings a second lashon b'shem his Rebbe, which he does not favor, but he says that the question here is, if he's a muad b'biut v'etiza, he's already a muad for biut v'etiza, halo mishalem elechatzi nezek. Despite the fact that he's a muad for kicking in this way, he still will only pay a chatzi nezek because he would have kicked anyway. The rocks would have gone out if he just walked. So his doing the biut did not contribute. Oh, Dilma, im huada b'kach, mishalem nezek shalem. If he's already a mu'ad for doing biut, then he becomes like a mu'ad and he pays nezek shalem. So the difference here will be, does he pay chatzi nezek or does he pay full nezek? Because he's already mu'ad for biut. He is someone who's already been known to kick in this manner on a regular basis. So now that he's kicking on a regular basis in this manner, what is the resultant damage chayav for? Is it chayav for regel? Because he would have kicked the stones irrespective of him kicking intentionally. So therefore it's still regel and he pays chatzi nezek tzrorot. Or because he did it through biut and it's keren. And in keren he's already done it three times. He's considered to be a regular offender here, so he would pay nezek shalem. That's the way Rashi brings the second possibility as to the nature of the question. You can see in the Rabbeinu Chananel brings a similar lashon to the Rebbeim of Rashi, and he just explicates on it a little more. He says, Kevin Dolefsha the Zguye, Elaim came in a tezet, since he couldn't walk without it shooting out, Orcheu, and that is considered to be Orche, Viregel, Bishut and Izak, Nezek Shalem, Mishalem. And since you're in the Chatera Nizak, and it's Regel, you'd pay Nezek Shalem. Odil Mahashta, Mia Machmat, Biut, Nitzan. Over here it came from a biut, v'tzrorot ninhu, and then it's tzrorot. So the way the Rebbeinu Chananel formulates it's slightly different than what Rashi's Rebbeim said. Rashi's Rebbeim said, do we say it's regel, and you're chayev chatzi nezek? Do we say it's keren, and then you're chayev nezek shalem? The other hand, the Rebbeinu Chananel posed the question that it's all regel. It's not a question of whether it's regel or not. It is regel. Do we consider it so or chayu that it's regular regel? I mean, you pay Nezek Shalem because there's no way for it to walk here without shooting stones out, and therefore it's considered to be Regel and not Tzrorot. On the other hand, or do we say that because it came through Biut and it was slightly unusual, that makes it into Tzrorot? What's important about this Rabbeinu Chananel, and it's pointed out by the Pnei Yeshua back on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, what you see from this Rabbeinu Chananel is that Tzrorot is not exactly Kuruchayu. That means that there are different levels of regularity. And the way the Rabbeinu Chananel is defining regel is, how normal is this? If it is absolutely normal, then it's regel. It's not tzrorot. Even though there's rocks shooting out and it came from kocho, it's still considered to be regel. In order to be tzrorot, it has to be somewhat unusual. Not completely unusual, mishuneh, to the point that it's already keren, but there are now what we call three different levels. There's completely normal, that's regel. Slightly abnormal, that's Tzrorot. Completely abnormal, that's Keren. And that's what the Rabbeinu Hananel is suggesting, that there is a continuum here which moves it from Regel to Keren, but the Tzrorot, or the definition of Tzrorot, is that it's unusual, that it's not completely normal in this case. So that's what you have here. You have a Machloket between Rashi's first Lashon and the second Lashon, first of all. And even within the second Lashon, the Rabbeinu Hananel gives a slightly different version of that, whether it's completely regel. The way Rashi formulates it, is it regel or is it keren? The Rabbeinu Hananel says, is it regel or is it tzrorot? Meaning that regel is totally normal and tzrorot is slightly abnormal. And that would be the way to explain the Machloket over here. With regards to what we do in cases of teiku, the Rabbeinu Hananel already says that here we have kaimelon, the mimona. When you have a teiku and mimona, lakula. You go to kula lo mafkinan, because the motzi mechavero alav araya. If you're left in a position of safek, we're not going to be gover. We're not going to force a person to pay because the burden of proof is on the one who wants to collect. So in this case, you would not be able to collect. But on the other hand, that leads into a different machloket is e mafkina mine. Yudchet amud beth, Rashi mentioned something about this. And then we saw this earlier with regards to in Bavel. Since they're not done in dine knasot in Bavel, the Beit Din will not come in and deal with it. Then you, if you're tofes, if the person grabs it, then lo mafkina mimwe, we don't take it away from him. You saw the machloket mishonim there as to whether when he grabs it, they can only grab the thing that did the nezek, the mazik itself, or you're allowed to go after anything in his estate and take it in order to get payment. There was a secondary machloket over there as to how much can you take. So there we saw in the Rosh brought two opinions. For instance, in a case of kefel, or arba v'chamisha, are you allowed to only be mafkia? Are you only allowed to take the amount that is the keren? Because that's what you're entitled to. Or can you also take the kefel and the arba v'chamisha? That depends on what you think is the mechayev for knas. So the same question arises over here. Here we have a question, and we're uncertain as to whether you pay a quarter nezek or you pay half nezek. So now, how much do we allow him to take without intervening? Can he take a quarter nezek? Because for sure he is entitled to a quarter nezek. We just can't do anything about it because it's a knas. So that we allow him to take. Or do we say, once he's taking already and he takes a half, we can't back that out of him because it might be that he's right to take a half. So that turns out to be a machloket. The Rambam, the Rif Paskin, lo mafkinim minei. Meaning that if he takes a half nezek over here, even though he's only really entitled at minimum to a quarter, the half is already going up to the other side of the safek, we still let him keep it, even if he takes out a half. The Rosh, on the other hand, says mafkina mine. If he takes the half, we take it away from him, because he's only entitled to a quarter at minimum, and that's all he can take. If he takes a half already, he's going to the other side of the safek, and he's paskening. We don't want that. So the question is, what's the machloket? There is shorsha machloket, v'shalavetchik. So Tzal says over here, the question of how does tfisa work? Is it that tfisa works because, since Beit Din can't deal with nasot, it pulls itself out of the case completely? And since it pulls itself out of the case completely, Beit Din will not get involved in either side, which means that if you're tofes, we're not going to take it away from you. If you're not tofes, we're not going to give it to you. But that means if the guy takes a half, Beit Din also will not intervene because they don't deal with knasot. So even though he only has proof, at least for a minimum of a quarter, and a half is already extending to the other side of the safek, Beit Din just doesn't get involved. Since Beit Din doesn't get involved, he takes a half. Then the motzi mechavero alav araya flips to the other side, and now he's got to take it back. You're going to have him. Beit Din doesn't get involved. And therefore, according to the Rambam, the Rif, that's why you keep it when you take a half. And then for the Rosh, when we say that Beit Din is not involved, is that the reason that we allow you to be tofes is only in a case of Tanat Vadai. That is something that we saw back in the case of Tfisa that Beli Tosafot mentioned, that you have to have a Tanat Vadai. You have to have a clear claim over here. So in the cases before we had a clear claim, then he can go after and be tofes. Over here, by definition, he doesn't have a clear claim. He has a clear claim to the quarter, does not have a clear claim to the half. And so because of that, Beit Din will intervene and not allow him to take more than a quarter, because there he can't make a definitive claim. Because his knowledge is no better than Beit Din's knowledge. Beit Din has a safek here, so how could he not have a safek about the halachas? So based on that safek, we will only allow him to take a quarter and not a half. And that explains the difference in the between the Rambam Nerif and the Rosh. On the other hand, as to whether when you're tofes, you're allowed to be tofes a half or only a quarter. All right, so now the Gemara here continues with the next question, which is, Baimine Rabbi Yirmi Amid Rabbi Zeira. Haitam Alechet Birshut Arabim. Over here, there's a question as to whether the word ba'ata or bi'ta is in there. Our Gemara's have it in, But the majority of Rishonim do not have it in their Girsaot. You can see that already in the Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel says, Meirim Rebizera, Haitame Alechet, Birshut Rabim, Vehitiza. The word Be'ata is not found there at all. So that means that we're talking about here normal Tzvarot, Vezika, and it does damage. Mau. What's the din? The Karen Midaminanle Vechayevet. Do we compare it to Karen and therefore your Chayav? Odilma Tolada de Regalu Uptura. Maybe it's a Tolada, derivative of Regal, and you are Patur. The case here is a case of Rishuta Rabim. We know that the rules by Regal is Patur, Birshuta Rabim. On the other hand, Karen is Chayav in Rishuta Rabim. So if you leave out the word Biata over here, that means that everybody agrees we're dealing with a case of Tzrorot, which is Regal. But because you pay Chatzi Nezek, so therefore it has a certain Dimyom comparison to Karen, and just like by Karen, you're Chayav in Rishuta Rabim, so too over here you'll be Chayav in Rishuta Rabim. Or do we say that it's completely regular? And since it's regular completely, that means Katzi Nezek Tzorot does not pay Birshuta Rabim. If you say that, then Rabbi Zera's answer to this question, which is Mistavra Tolada de Regalu. This makes sense to say it's a derivative of regular because it's Kiru Chayu, it's a normal behavior. And if it's a derivative of regular, then regular is Patur Birshuta Rabim. Then Rabbi Zera is basically confirming what the Gemara has taken for granted until now, which is Chatzi Nezek Tzorot is a din in Regel. And that's what Rabbi Zera is saying, Mistavro, that it's Regel, because it's Kiur Chayu. That's if you don't have the word Biata in there. And then if you have the word Biata in there, then the question becomes, how do we deal with this? Do we deal with it as being a Tolada of Karen, because there's a Shinui here, there's something unusual happening? Or is it a Tolada of Regel, because it's happening through Kochot? It's Tzorot. And maybe Tzorot is only found under the category of Regel. And so because of that, the question is it Karen or Regel? And then the answer that Mistabra, that it's Tolada de Regel, would not be answering the generic sense of what is Tzorot, but rather dealing with it specifically. Can you have a Shinoi or not a Shinoi in Tzorot? Seemingly that would mean that we're answering that there is no Shinoi in Tzorot over here, because of the fact that it's Misavra, that it's a Toladav Regal, and that it always remains as Chatzi Nezek, and you would be Patur Birshuta Rabim. Right, Itiza Birshuta Rabim, Vezika Birshuta Yachid. So he continues to ask him, what happens if the Tzorot emerged from the Rishuta Rabim, but did damage in the Rishuta Yachid? Mahu, what is the din? Amalei, Akira Enkan, Hanacha Yeshkan. So he borrows terminology from the Gemara in Shabbat with regards to Hotza'ah. By Hotza'ah on Shabbat, you require two aspects. You have to have an akira, you have to remove the object, lift the object out of one reshut, and then hanacha, you have to put it down in another reshut. So you have to be okir, pick it up in the reshut yachid, and put it down in the reshut rabim, or vice versa. Unless you have both the akira and hanacha, you have not completed the Hotza'ah. There is no Hotza'ah unless you have both of them there. Therefore, if you have two parties involved, one of them picked it up out of the reshut yachid, and the other one puts it down in the reshut rabim, then they're not chayavim because each one of them did half of the melacha. So what he suggests over here is the same thing. He says, Akira ain't kan. The rock or the stone, the pebble that is shooting out emanates from Rishut Rabim, which is a makom tur for regel. And then in Anacha Yeshkan, it lands in Rishut Nizak, which is somewhere where you are chayav. Well, since it emanated from a makom tur, you don't have a complete action that was done in a place that you're chayav, and therefore you should be patur. Is that really true? He was walking along the way and rocks were shooting out. Ben Birshut Yechid, Ben Birshut Rabim, Chayav. Whether it's Birshut Yechid or Birshut Rabim is Chayav. My love, what is the case here? Etiza Birshut Rabim, Vezika Birshut Rabim. Let us suggest here that the case is that it shot out in Birshut Rabim and did damage in Birshut Rabim, and that's why you are Chayav. So if that's the case, that would upend the original answer that we gave. The original answer we gave is that when you have rocks flying in Rishut Rabim, that they have a din of Regel, not a din of Karen. Over here, if you suggest that the case here is that it was shot out in Rishut Rabim, landed in Rishut Rabim, and you're Chayav, that would prove that it's Karen and not Regel. So that would upend his first answer. So it says, well, Heitiza Rishut Rabim, Ezika Rishut Yachid. Now the case here is, where is it emanating from? Did it emanate from Rishut Rabim and then land in Rishut Yachid? Or did it emanate from Rishut Yachid and land in Rishut Yachid? But then that upends his second answer, because now you're saying that when it emanates from Rishut Rabim and lands in Rishut Yachid, you are Chayav. That goes against the second answer he gave, that you're Patur. Didn't you already tell me that you should not be Chayav in that case? Hamalei Hadrabi, I reversed my position. I changed my mind with regards to this. So that means that he still believes that in terms of Tolada de Regel or Tolada de Karen, he's definitely a Tolada de Regel. So that means you are Patur Bishut Rabim, but if the stone emanates from the Shut Rabim and lands in the Shut Rabim, you would be Chayav, despite the fact that there is a separation between the Akira and the Anacha. I'm going to go through the next couple of cases, then I'll come back and explain why that is or what changed over here. Eight of it, Darsalaki Vishavarto, steps on the utensil and breaks it. The Nafala Shevala Kliacher. And then a shard from this utensil hits another utensil. Vishavaro, and breaks it. Al Rishon Mishalem Nezek Shalem. Vacharon Mishalem Chatzi Nezek. On the first one you pay Nezek Shalem, on the second one you pay Chatzi Nezek. Vitani Allah. And on that, qualification. Bamed Varim Amurim, when is that true? Birshuta Nizak. That is when it's in the Rishuta Nizak. Because in Rishuta Nizak, when he steps on the first clay, that's Regel. Regel and Rishuta Nizak is Chayav Nezek Shalem. The second clay that had the shard hit from the first clay, that's Trorot. So he's High Chayav Chatzi Nezek. Aval Birshuta Rabim, if it's completely in Rishuta Rabim, Ala Rishon Ptura. For the first one, you are Ptur, Vacharon Chayavet. So the first one, you're Ptur, the second one, you're Chayavet. My love, what's the case here? Hey, Tiza Rishut Rabim, Vizika Rishut Rabim. Everything was done Rishut Rabim. You're patur on the first clay because that's regel Rishut Rabim. When the shard from that first clay hits the second clay, you are chayav because that is Karen. And Karen is chayav Rishut Rabim. So that would explain this, but that would upend his first answer that it's a din in regel, not a din in Karen. Where's his law? Now the case is where he stepped on the first clay in Rishut Rabim. That's why he's patur, because that's Regel Rishut Rabim, which you're patur from. The shard goes flying into the Rishut Yachid and damages the second clay in Rishut Yachid. So that means that it's a case of Tzrorot emanating from Rishut Rabim going into Rishut Yachid. Va'amart, again, didn't you say Akira Ein Kan Anocha Yeshkan? You thought that that should be patur? Amar Hadrabi, I reversed my position. It's an unusual Gemara because Gemara is going to do this a third time, which is he keeps asking the question and then he keeps saying, I reversed my position. I'm not sure why he didn't feel after the first time that it was that way, but it seems that maybe he's asking from each of these brito to upend the first answer that he gave. That in each case, he said it was a toladav regel, not a toladav karen. In each of these cases, the Gemara's havamina is that it looks like this is a toladav karen. So then once he dismissed that, he had to dismiss it in a way that disagreed with his second position. And then he asked the same question. Did you say otherwise? And then he would say, how'd you reverse that position? Here's the third case, which is, Ini, is that true? Ve'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Chatzi Nezek Chaluk, Lo Rishut Yachid, Ve'lo Rishut Rabim. There's no difference by Chatzi Nezek, whether it's in Rishut Yachid and in Rishut Rabim, which would seem to indicate that there's no differentiation between Chatzera Nizak and Rishut Rabim with regards to Chatzi Nezek Tzorot, which would imply that when you kick in Rishut Rabim and it hits in Rishut Rabim, you'd be chayav, just like you're chayav in the Chatzer HaNizak. So what would that imply? That Chatzi Nezek Tzorot is a din in Karen, not a din in Regel. Because the only way not to differentiate between Rishut Rabim and Chatzer HaNizak is to say it's Karen. Because Karen's chayav in Rishut Rabim, it's chayav in Rishut HaNizak. So if you're paying Chatzi Nezek here in both places, must be that it's Karen. That would go against Rabbi Zera's first answer. The answer, Gemara says, no. That's not right. No. The case here is where it went from Rishut Rabim into Rishut Yachid. The case here is where it shot out Rishut Rabim into Rishut Nizak. Over there, you're Chayav, just like when you're in the Rishut Nizak, you're Chayav. He says, well, if that's the case, it goes against your second position. Because when it emanates from Rishut Rabim, goes into Rishut Nizak, that you are Patur. Va'amart Akira Enkan Anacha Yeshkan Amalei Hadrabi. So now, here you're saying that he's chayav. Just like you're chayav in Rishut HaNizak, you're also chayav when it goes from Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaNizak. Again, he says, Hadrabi, I reversed my position, and therefore, I believe it's Toladav Regel, but I also believe that if it goes from Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaNizak, that he is chayav. So over here, the Rosh over here notes that even though before we paskin in the Sheet of Rava, the Batar Mi'ikara Azlinan, that we go after the start of the damage, over here, we don't say that. Because if you said here, you go after the start of the damage, then when the rock went into motion, then you would be already patur, because it emanated from Rishut HaRabim. We go batar mi'ikara azlinan. On the other hand, here, we're saying, no, you go batar wherever the damage is done. So that assumes two things over here. Number one, it assumes that we paskin that batar mi'ikara azlinan, which was the sheet of Rashi and the Balei Tosfot over there. The Ramban thought, no, that we go Batar Shvirat Manah, Azlina, we go after where the Kli breaks. But according to the Balei Tosfot and Rashi, we go Batar Mi'ikara. The Rosh came, why don't over here we go Batar Mi'ikara? The second that we say is that Batar Mi'ikara has application when the item that's going to do the damage is in flight. We saw the Balei Tosfot that said that that only matters, that we say that it's a Kli Shavur, when it was the Kli itself that was in motion. But if it was the another object that was going to cause the Kli to be damaged, over there we don't see that it's a Kli Shavur until it actually breaks. So the Balei Tosfot, it's not an issue because it only broke once the rock hit it in the Rishut Yachid. So that's where the damage happened. That locus is what determines where it was damaged. But if you believe not like the Balei Tosfot, that even when the rock is in motion and it's going to hit this Kli, that it's as if it's done from the moment it leaves, how come we don't say that it's in Rishut Rabim? The Rosh over here says, Ubir Bisteacher is a Gzera Tekatuv, that the damage is only determined to be in the Rishut Nizak and not in the Rishut Rabim. Because it says, Ubir Bisteacher, the Steacher is the determining location for the damage. That's what the Rosh says. Now, in terms of what was Rabbi Zera's change of heart, might have to do with why you're Patur for Shane in Rishut Rabim. You could be Patur for Shane in Rishut Rabim. This is what the Rif said. It's because Kior Chayu. It's normal. It's normal behavior. Since it's normal behavior, you are Patur. We're not going to make you Chayav, normal type of behavior in the Rishut HaRabim. And that's the Patur of Regel. Now, what you could argue then is, if it's normal behavior, within that, you could view that in one of two ways. You could say that it's normal behavior for the animal to go along and kick up stones. So if that's normal behavior, and that's why you're Patur, it should be irrelevant whether he kicks the stone into Rishut HaRabim, or he kicks it into Rishut HaYachid, you should be Patur in both cases, because he's acting normally. Or do we say, since it's normal behavior for an animal to kick up stones, therefore the Baal HaKli is responsible. The person who put his utensils in Rishut HaRabim has to anticipate that rocks are going to go flying in Rishut HaRabim, because that's normal for animals that walk in Rishut HaRabim for stones to come up. And therefore, when he placed his Kalim in Rishut HaRabim, he's not going to get compensated for that, because he should have known or anticipated that rocks are going to come. On the other hand, if he puts the Kalim in his own property, over there he doesn't have to anticipate rocks coming in there because it's his property. He doesn't have to curtail his utility of his chatzer because something rocks come flying out. If that's the case, we would make you chayav. And that might be the change in heart here of Rabbi Zera. In the first instance, we say that the whole thing has to do with the animal acting normally. Since he's acting normally, you're patur. That means, well, if it flies here, flies there, it makes no difference. He's acting normally. Whenever you'd be patur both for Rishut HaRabim or if it flew into Rishut HaYachid. On the other hand, if you say that the reason you're patur in Rishut HaRabim is because the Baal HaKli was the posheya here, because he put his Kli into a place of danger. He put it into the trajectory of what normally would happen in Rishut HaRabim, and he's responsible for that, so you don't have to pay when his things get destroyed. When he puts it in his own property, you will be responsible, because there he can put his Kalim down, and it's not his fault that the rocks came into his property, and for that reason, you would be responsible in that case. And that might explain the change in heart here of Rabbi Zera, why he changed his opinion, because he depends on how you view what the tour in Rishut HaRabim is. Ibai Deima, Yama Rabbi Yochanan and Karen. Some say, no, that Rabbi Yochanan's statement is only on Karen, meaning that Rabbi Yochanan's statement is only about that, we're talking about Chatzin Ezek Min HaTorah, something that's explicitly in the Torah, which is Karen. And that's where he says there's no difference between Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim. Well, isn't that obvious? That should be obvious that there's no difference, because Karen doesn't have a Patur of Rishut HaRabim. So Rashi says, then the Chiddush is, Lafuke Mimanda Parach Kaman Lo Tei Karen Rishut HaRabim Chayev Klum. Says this is going against the position that says later on that it's a Kal V'chomer. That if Shane and regular Patur of Rishut HaRabim, certainly Karen should be Patur of Rishut HaRabim. So Rabbi Yochanan's statement coming to undo that, or say that's wrong, and that Karen is Chayav in Rishut HaRabim. And so that's the Chiddush Rabbi Yochanan saying. You could have argued also that he's saying that it's not like Rabbi Tarfon, that Chatzi Nezek applies both in Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid. But in that case, it's less of a Chiddush to say that, because Rabbi Tarfon's a Dat Yachid. For him to come along to be Mafkiya Midat Yachid, that doesn't make so much sense. But then the Chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan is that in Rishut HaRabim you're still Chayav Chatzi Nezek and not Patur the Gamrei. And Rabbi Yochanan was simply speaking about Karen. He's not addressing our situation of Shane and Regel. And therefore, it would be not a question on Rabbi Zera, not according to his first position or his second position. Neither of those would be questionable based on Rabbi Yochanan. Yotiv Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, Rabbi Yoshaya, Akilo de Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya and Rabbi Yoshaya sitting on, and here you say Akila. Rashi says Akila is a porch that was in front of the house of Rabbi Yehuda. Nafach milta b'minayu. Through their discussion, something came out. Over here, Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah most likely is Rabbi's grandson, Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah, who is an early Amora, and not Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi himself. And he is the one who put the what we know as the calendar today together. That came from Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah. So now, Kishkasha b'zanva mahu. If the animal, while waving its tail, did damage, what is the din? Amalei idach. The other person said back, v'chiyach zenu b'zanva v'yelech. What are you going to have to do? The guy's going to have to walk through Rishut Rabim holding his animal's tail the whole time? So what he's answering back is that it is normal behavior. And what, you're going to require that the Balim, when the animal's doing normal behavior, to somehow subvert that behavior and have to watch the tail the whole time? Iochi Karenami. If you want to say that that's behavior that we don't ask the Balim to take care of, say the same thing by Karen. Neima v'chiyach zenu b'karen v'yelech. What, you're going to say the same thing over there, that what? He has to hold on to the animal's karnot, his horns, and walk around. Since it's impossible for them to do that, he should not be chayav by Karen as well. The other one says, chayav rashti, can't compare the cases. Karen lav urcheihu. Karen is not normal for the animal to behave in such a manner. Ha urche. When it waves its tail, it waves its tail, that is normal behavior of the animal. So therefore, you're right. What we do is, by the case of horns, we say, you're right, we're not going to make you responsible for watching it up front because you couldn't expect it. Since you couldn't expect it, we say you're only chayav chatzi nezek in that case because we want you to watch it more carefully, but we're not going to demand that you're all over his karnot. Once it does it three times, we say, wait a minute, this is a serious problem over here. This animal acts out of the ordinary all the time. It has become an ordinary behavior. Yes, we are going to obligate you to watch its karen. On the other hand, by the tail, which is completely normal behavior, and it's normal behavior from start to finish, in that case, we're going to say to you, we're not going to tell you, watch the tail, tie the tail down. We're going to say that's normal behavior, and therefore, if it does damage, it's like regular b'shut rabim, and you are patur because of the normalcy of this behavior, which goes back to what we said before, that the patur of regular b'shut rabim might be because it's orche, because it's so normal the behavior. Mar says, v'chi me'achar d'orche, mai mi'bayile. Well, if it's so normal, the behavior, then what was the question to start with? If it's normal behavior, of course it's regal. So why would he raise the question at all? So kishkush yutera mibayile. He's asking, what happens if it's a super tail-swaying animal? He does a lot of extra movement, or he is very active with his tail. Does that make a difference? That was his question over here. What's the story with that? It's not clear here from the Gemara what the conclusion is. Is the conclusion of the Gemara Kishkush Yitzera is Orfe, that's normal. And that's where the Gemara is saying now, the original question was about this excessive swaying of the tail. And what the Gemara says is that's Orfe, that's normal. Or is the Gemara saying that when the regular swaying of the tail, that was normal? Now the Gemara now reworks it and says the question was extra or excessive swaying of the tail, what's the din? And then the Gemara never addresses it, and therefore it's left as unresolved. So that's a machloket how to read the Gemara here, whether we read the Gemara as now resolved that it's Kiruchayu, or the Gemara is now opening the new question, and then the Gemara never dealt with this new question with regards to Kishkush Yetera. By Ravina, Kishkusha Ba'amata Mahu. If it, through its member, it did damage while the member was swaying and it hit something, Mi Amrina, what is the din here? Mi De Dava Karen. It's similar to Karen. Karen lav yitzra katokifle. The reason that the animal gores is because its quote-unquote yitzar got the better of it, in that its bad behavior overtook it, and it went ahead and gored. Hakanami lo shna. So to over here, the reason that its member is doing damage is because its yitzar got a hold of it. It wants to reproduce. It wants to. It sees a female that it wants to reproduce with. And therefore, it's this yetzer that is driving the cause of the problem. Odilma, Karen, kavanato lazik. By Karen, not only is it yetzer to do something and to gore and do something bad, but it does it intentionally. It goes to damage. That's the whole goring. Ha, ain't kavanato lazik. Over here, even though its yetzer got the better of it, it's still not trying to or intending to damage with its member, and therefore, you would not be chayav and teku. That would leave it as an unresolved issue. Meaning that if you compare it to Karen, Karen chayav in Rishut Rabim, and you'd be chayav chatzi nezek b'shut Rabim. On the other hand, if you think it's regel, that it's normal behavior, and the animal is not intending to do any damage over here, then it'd be a subset of regel, and as a subset of regel, it would be patur b'shut, and that's the nature of the Gemara's question over here. Right now, Hatana Golim Muadim Lalech Darkam Lishaber. The Tana Golim are Muad to go around, walk around, dance around, and do damage. The remainder of the Mishnah says if the chicken got tangled with a Dalil, Hayat Dalil Kashur Baraglav, he had a string around its leg, and then it did damage with that. Over there we said that he's only Chayav Chatzi Nezek. So now we get a qualification of that statement. It's only true if the string became attached to the chicken by itself. He got himself tangled in the about kashro adam, sharo adam chayav. If an individual tied it to him, then he is chayav. Because the person who tied it to him is the problem. Since he tied it to the chicken, he's the one that caused the damage to happen now, because he put the damaging item in there. And as Rashi notes over here, kashro adam chayav kakusher nezek shalem davi bor. It's a boar. He created an obstacle in the Rishut HaRabim called a boar by putting the string on this chicken. When he tied the string on the chicken, he created or he generated a boar. And he's chayav for a boar, wherever the damage is that the boar does. On the other hand, if it came onto the chicken itself, then what's the din? Nikshar me'elav man chayav. If it got tied onto the chicken by itself, he got tangled in it by himself, who is responsible? You have the owner of the chicken, and you have the owner of the string. Ilay mabala dalil, if you say it's the owner of the string, hey chidami, what's the case? Ida atzne, if he put the string away properly, and still, nevertheless, the chicken got tangled in it, then anusu, he is completely absolved of any fault here. He did what he could to protect the string. The chicken dug its way in or did whatever it did to get tangled in the string. It's not his fault. He took care of the string properly. Vilo atzne, if he didn't put it away properly, pusheyo. Then he's a negligent party here, and of course he should be chayav, because he's the one that caused the problem by being negligent and leaving the string out. Ella, who's chayav here, is the bala tarnagol. Talking about the owner of the chicken. The owner of the chicken now is responsible, meaning that the owner of the string put it away properly. And in putting it away properly, that absolves him of any obligations over here. So now who is chayav? The owner of the chicken. And where it says, wait a minute, how is the owner of the chicken chayav? Maishna kule nezek delo. He doesn't pay full nezek. He only pays chatzi nezek. The reason being, dichtiv ki iftach ish bor velo shor bor. Because it's only when you, a human being, opens up a bor or creates a damage of bor that you're chayav. If an animal digs a bor, you're not chayav for the nekim of bor. Bor has to be created and generated by man, not by an animal. So over here, when the chicken got tangled in the string, he created the bor. The chicken itself created the boar by getting tangled in the string. So now the Gemara says, Chatzi Nezek Nami. So just like you're not Chayav Nezek Shalem because you didn't open up the boar, but the animal did. Also by Chatzi Nezek, Ish Boar Velo Shor Boar. You should be Patur the Gamre. Ella Matnitan Be'adyei Aduyei. Case of the Mishnah is the case of Adyei Aduyei. Bechi Itmar de Ravuna Be'alma Itmar. Ravuna's statement was made generically, not on our Mishnah, not qualifying our Mishnah, rather about this case. Dalil Hefker, if you have a string that is Hefker. Amar Rav Huna, Nikshar Me'elav Patur. The animal gets tangled in it by itself, you're Patur, because no one's at fault here. It was a string that was Hefker let out, there's no Balim to the string. The fact that the chicken got caught up in it is normal for a chicken to get caught up in a string. But over here you can't obligate the Bala Tarnagol because the damage is being done by the boar, not the Tarnagol. The boar, the chicken made by getting tangled in the string. Ksharo adam chayav. On the other hand, if a person tied the string onto the leg of the chicken, you are chayav. Mishum mai chayav. What are you responsible for? Why are you chayav over here if you tied it onto the chicken? Because the boar does not do damage where you created it. You dug the boar in one location and the boar does damage somewhere else. You tied the string onto the tarnagol here. Tarnagol goes, runs away, and then does damage somewhere else. The string that you created, which is boar, is now somewhere else from where you put it down. The din of boar, one of the unique qualities of boar, is that it doesn't move. It's stationary. The item comes to it to be damaged. It doesn't go out and do damage. Over here, the chicken's running around with the string. The string's doing damage somewhere else. So why are you chayab over here when you tie the string to the leg of the chicken? You remember that we had this back on Davov. We wanted to know, a boar that moves around, are you chayav for that? The Gemara said, yes, we're going to do that from a tzad shaveh between eish and boar. since the Tzad HaShavesh Medination Bor is that you're chayav for a bor, even though it's in motion, moving like an ish moves. So therefore, your case here, when the chicken moves around the string, you're responsible for it, not because of bor, not because of ish, but because of combination of bor and ish, which is the equivalent of bor amit gagel, a bor that moves around from location to location. Now over here, I skipped over defining what adya, adyuye means. First of all, it's a machloket Rashi and the Rabbeinu Chananel, how to explain this. And then secondarily, what the meaning of this is also machloket in Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot. Which is, Rashi says over here, about adya adyuye, the case of our mission is a case where the chicken launched the string. Or it launched whatever item was that was on his leg. He launches it and it does damage when it leaves the chicken. For that reason, the ball of the string is not chayav whatsoever because the damage was done in flight by the chicken's throwing of the string. The chicken's throwing of the string does the damage. The ball of the string can no longer be held responsible for that because it's not his string that did the damage. It was the launching of the string by the Tarnagol that did the damage. For that reason, Rashi says, Vafilu kisharo adam, even if in the Mishnah, the string was tied onto the leg of the chicken by someone intentionally. The only one who pays here is the owner of the Tarnagol, which is Chatzin Ezek, Vakosher Patur. The person who tied it there is Patur, Shalonit Kala Adam Biboro. Nobody tripped on his string. His string did not cause damage because of it being stationary in some place and then causing damage. All the damage was caused by the chicken himself engaging the string, tossing the string, releasing it, and having it fly. So Rashi says two things over here. First of all, that adye adyuye is the case where he launched the string, and that's tzoru. It doesn't have to be a string here. It could be tit. It could be anything that he got tangled in that was tied to him by someone else, put on him by someone else, or he got tangled in it. When he launches it, it now becomes the sole responsibility of the balatan, because it's his koach that did the damage. That's the way Rashi reads it. First of all, you have the Rabbeinu Chananel who argues on Rashi's explanation of adye adyuye. He says adye adyuye is not that he launched the string, but rather that he was perish didatanakol taklib dalil shibraglo b'shavero. That what happened was that the string on his leg got caught with the kli, and then he dragged the kli along, and the kli got damaged from his dragging along with the string. Number two, the Balei HaTosafot say over here, he thinks Rashi is wrong. Says Rashi says that the ball of the string is completely exempt over here. The Balei HaTosafot say, I don't understand that. He says, Vikasha the Perush, Mikamakom the Chayav Mishum Isho. You're right, he's not Chayav Mishum Bor, because the thing was launched into the air and did damage. But at least he should be Chayav for Esh. By Esh, just like when you have a Ruach Acher that gets involved with the Esh, you're Chayav for the spirit of the Esh. So do over here, when the chicken launches the string, according to Rashi, then you should be chayav for Eish. You put the string there, the chicken launched it, so it's, you caused the problem here. You put the issue into play, and everyone he launches it, you're chayav. And so he says that's exactly what the Balei HaTosafot say, that the Bala Dalil is definitely chayav here, for at least half of the damage, because he put the string there. The only question is the Bala Tarnagol also chayav? And that's what Tosafot says over here. The kashro adam chayav mashma kol. Ubeadui adui einami chayav balatanagol. Ubeadui adui, the balatanagol is also chayav, meaning not only is the bala dalil chayav, but also the balatanagol is chayav. So that's the case of kasharo. So that's the responsibility in the Mishnah. So you have two things that people argue on Rashi about. Number one is, what's the case? It's the case where he launched it, or is the case where it was still tied to him and he's dragging the kli and does damage? Number two is the bala dalil, when he ties it onto the leg of the chicken, chayav if the chicken launched it. Is he chayav? Yes, because Tosafot says it's eish, and you're chayav. Whereas the Rashi, you're patur, because it's boar. And the boar didn't do damage. If boar moved and went into a trajectory, that's not something that you did. The question is, why does Rashi disagree with the Balei HaTosafot and say that it's not eish? The way that Reb Zvechik says that the Chakira here is, maybe that the difference is whether you're dealing with a davar amazik, or a davar that's not naturally a mazik, which is, in the case of eish, or a gachelet, or a kol, the item is an item that damaged. And therefore, whether an animal carries it away, or a wind gets involved with it, you already put a dangerous item into play, and then when something else takes over and starts to move it, you're responsible for that. On the other hand here, the string here is not inherently a damaging item. The reason it damages over here is because the chicken launched the string. So therefore, you're not, according to Rashi, being responsible for Eish over there, because The launching of the string is what did the damage. Not the string itself is not a damaging item. If it stayed where it is, it wouldn't do any damage. The only reason it's damaging is because it was launched. And therefore, what created the mazik over here is the chicken. Since the chicken created the mazik, we can't hold you responsible for that because that is not what Eish is. Eish is the mazik exists. And then something other, koach acher is murabo, and that's what takes it off. Over here, the koach acher is generating it and making it into a mazik. There we won't hold you responsible. So that's one way to explain the Shita of Rashi, why there's no Eish over here. Another way to formulate the difference is what is considered being koach acher murabo. That when you say koach acher murabo, when it's a wind that picks up the Eish, then it's what we call, you could expect it. It's a koach that doesn't have any mind of its own, and it simply carries the Eish somewhere else. So in that case, we'll make you responsible for koach acher murabo. On the other hand, when you have an animal that gets in between here, that's not a ruach getting involved here. The animal itself has somewhat of a mind of its own. So if it's a mind of its own, then it's not necessarily called Eish with koach acher murabo. The koach acher murabo is what's generating the problem over here. And that's why maybe you'll be patur. So that's number one thing in Rashi. The second thing that comes up in Rashi is the next case, which is a case where we said Rav Huna is speaking about a case where it was hefker. The string was hefker. So he said, if you tie it on, you're chayav. If you got tangled, then you're patur. Obviously, when you got tangled, patur, because nobody owns it. But the reason you're chayav when you tie it on, Rashi says, is because higbia. When you were magbia to tie it on, you were kone the string, and you became the balim of the string. So that's what Rashi says, that therefore you're chayav because you picked it up and took ownership of the string. The Balei HaTosafot say that's not necessarily true. Even if you did not pick up the string and tie it to the chicken, if you simply move the string from a place where it was shamor to a place where it's not shamor, you would also be chayav for the chicken getting tangled in the string there, even though you never took possession of it, because that's the nature of bor. Bor b'shut rabim is that if I don't own something, I'm still chayav and responsible for what happens. So here Rashi specifically speaks about ownership. You need to own the string, and then you tie it onto him, and that's why you're chayav. Implying that if you did not own the string, even though you tied it onto the chicken, you would not be chayav, or you caused the problem, you'd not be chayav, because it's not yours. Tosafot says, what are you talking about? That's exactly bor. Bor is a case where you create something that you're responsible for, even though not own it. So therefore, Tosafot says, even if you didn't pick it up to own it, you simply moved it from shamor to non-shamor, and the chicken gets caught up in it, you should be chayav, even though you never owned it. So again, here, Rav Soloveitchik answers on behalf of Rashi. Why does Rashi not think that? But he says it's different than bor. Bor is a case where you once owned it, and then now you're disowning the item. What we say to you is that your attempt to disown the item is not successful. Yes, you no longer own it, but for Nizakim, you're still responsible for it. It's your item. You created the problem. But then over here, the bor was never yours. Since it was never yours, when you're quote-unquote mafkir it, it was already hefker. The hefker, the mazik was never in your possession. And since that's the case, we can't make you responsible. That's how Rashi will look at it. Rashi says, a normal case of bor is that you own something and then you threw it out into the Reshut Rabim and left it there. That's why you're responsible, because you tried to disown it, and we don't allow you to do that at the expense of the Rabim. Then if you never owned it and you throw it out into the Reshut Rabim, it's not yours, you don't intend it to be yours, maybe there, that's not the din of bor, because we can't put it back in your possession. It was never in your possession. We can't then assign it to you. Somewhat difficult with that is when you dig a bor in the Reshut Rabim. You're digging a bor in the Reshut Rabim, seems to me that you never owned it there either, because it's owned by the Reshut Rabim, yet you're still responsible for it. So it seems to me that there is a paradigm of bor where you never owned it, and yet you are still chayav, and that would heavily favor the Shita of Tosafot if you explain Rashi Shita in this manner. The only way to maybe get around that is to formulate it this way, which is, it has to be something you were chayav to watch at some point, then you remain responsible to watch it. But if you're never responsible to watch it, then we can't make you obligated to watch it now. Bor b'shut rabim, you're always responsible to watch it, therefore it remains in your auspices for nezek. Now then, by the string, you were never responsible to watch it, and therefore you're not responsible. We can't make you responsible now. All of a sudden, even though you put it in a place that now could cause problems, but you never owned it, you're never responsible. All right, now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah. As we saw in the first Mishnah, we're going back to the Avot Nezikin and explaining them. First Mishnah explained the Avot Regel. We quoted this Mishnah because we said, wait, there's a duplication of the statement here in the beginning, just like by the first Mishnah. This is the Mishnah of Shein. Ketzad HaShein Mu'edet. So that's one way to read it. That's the way that Rashi reads it here and the way that the Ri reads it before. That's the question. The answer to that question is, Lecholet Aro'ila. That's what it means, mu'edah. It's mu'edah to eat things that it normally eats. And then it has a repetition, which is a beima mu'edah de chol perot v'yirakot. Beima is mu'edah to eat perot v'yirakot. The Gemara says, one duplication. One is for chaya, one is for beima. That's how we answered it before. The other way to read it, the way the Rashba and others read it before, it's similarly over here, is ketzad Hashem mu'edah de chol eter o'ilah. That's the question. The answer is, a beima mu'edah de chol perot v'yirakot. Problem is that in the answer, you're saying the same thing that you said in the question. Which is, it's how does it do the ra'oila? Well, it eats things that it's ra'oila. So that's what would be the duplication. Achlak suto kelim. If on the other hand it ate clothing or utensils, shalem is chatzi nezek, because that's mishuneh and it turns into keren. It's no longer shein, it's now keren. B'med varim amurim b'shut anizak. When are you chayav in the b'shut anizak? About b'shut rabim patur. This is shein and rega, which are p'turim b'shut rabim. So if it eats b'shut rabim, it's patur. If it eats b'shut anizak, then it's chayav. Okay, vim ne'anit. If it gets benefit, mishalem et mashenenit. Even in b'shut rabim, where you're patur from shein, you still have to pay for the hana'ah that the animal got. This is not mishum nezek. This is not tashlumim for nezek, because in b'shut rabim, it's not deemed to be nezek. The bala perot is the one responsible. Or either you say that he has a right for his animal to go there and you can expect the animal to eat, and that's why he's patur. Or the bala perot knows that there are animals in Rishut Rabim. If he put in Rishut Rabim, he's responsible for them. So for that reason, you're patur for shame. But with regards to hana'ah, the animal ate. And if the animal ate, you did get some benefit over here, which is now the animal no longer has to eat when you get home. The compensation you make is what would the feed would have cost you. You don't pay the true value of what it ate. You pay for the value garnered from your animal eating someone else's fruits or vegetables. In Okanami, you don't have to make restitution, compensation for the nezek, but if somebody benefits you, you still have to pay them. This is hana'ah that you're getting. Your animal ate, and now you don't have to feed it. You should have to compensate for that. Okay, it said, Mishalemet Mashinainit. How do you pay such a thing? Achla mitocha rechava, Mishalemet Mashinainit. If it eats out of the middle of the Rishut Rabim, you just pay for the benefit it got, not having to feed it anymore. Tzidei arechava, it's on the side of the road, mishalemet mashezika. Then you pay the full nezek. Obviously, what we're saying here is that in the middle of the road is Rishut Rabim. Tzidei Rishut Rabim, don't have a din of Rishut Rabim. Mipetach hachanut, mishalemet mashenenit. If he eats the fruits that are out in the front, by the front door of the store, there you just pay mashenenit, because those fruits or stuff are out in the Rishut Rabim. And therefore, you can expect him to eat, and it's patur from the nezek. On the other hand, mitocha chanut, he sticks his head into the store and has a meal, mishlamed mashizika. Then you pay the damage. So obviously, if he eats this high-end, whatever it is, if it's just mashinenit, you pay for the equivalent animal feed that you would have fed him. You don't pay for the full amount of the expensive item that he ate. On the other hand, if it's considered to be nezek, then if he even eats the expensive item, you're going to have to replace that expensive item because he shouldn't have been there. So taro banan. Shein mu'edet le'chol et ha'ra'oi la. Ketzad. Be'ema she'nichnasa le'chatzer ha'nizak. Animal enters into the chatzer ha'nizak. V'achla uchlim ha'ra'oim la. Eats things that it normally eats. V'shatata mashkim ha'ra'oim la. Drinks things it normally drinks. Mishalem nezek shalem. And you pay for full nezek because that's shein b'shut ha'nizak. That's your classic case of shein. V'chein chaya she'nichnasa le'chatzer ha'nizak. You have a wilder animal that goes into the courtyard of the nizak. And it attacks an animal, tears up an animal, and eats it. Vachla basar, shalem nezek shalem. You paid full nezek, because that's a normal case of shein. Upara shachla se'urim. The other hand, if you have a para that eats barley, v'chamor shachal karshinim, or you have a donkey that eats karshinim, which is usually cow feed. Kelo shalikei kazeh shemen. We have a dog that licks up the oil. V'chazir shachal chaticha shel basar. Or a pig that eats a piece of meat. V'shalmim nezek shalem. In all those cases, you pay nezek shalem. Amar of Papa. Hashved amar kol midei delav orche v'achla le'ayidei dechak shmei achilo. Now that you concluded, this braita basically says that even though these are not the normal feed for these animals or normal things that they eat, but when they're hungry, they eat them. That means that any eating of food, even though it's not the regular feed of this animal, that's considered to be ra'uila, and your chayav nezek shalem. It's not considered to be mishuneh. But the fact that the cow ate the food that belongs to the donkey, and the donkey ate the food that belongs to the cow, the pig ate meat, which it doesn't do, or the dog licked up oil, which it doesn't usually do. Since when they're hungry, they do eat it, that's called ra'uila. That's called normal behavior and ra'oila, and you pay nezek shalem. So once you say that, hay shunra da'chal tamre, if you have a cat that eats dates, v'chamra da'chal benita, or you have a donkey that eats a fish, mishalem nezek shalem, you'd have to pay full nezek, even though it's unusual. So when it says, al chamra da'chal nema upalse v'salo, this donkey went ahead and ate a loaf of bread that was sitting in a basket, but he was so hungry, not only did he eat the bread, he chewed down the basket. And whether he actually swallowed it, I don't know. Here's his loaves that he actually chewed on the basket. Chayavei Rabbi Yehuda l'shalem nezek shalem anema. The bread he made him pay full nezek. Asala chatzi nezek. And on the basket he only paid chatzi nezek. V'amai. Why do you have to do that? Came into orche the mechel nema. Since it is normal for him to eat bread, orche namin the flusev salo. It's normal for him to eat the basket. Meaning that when you put bread in a basket and the donkey goes after the bread, you can expect that he ate the loaf, and on his way of eating the loaf, he's going to chew out the basket because that's normal behavior. You should be chayav nezek shalem on both items. Even though the basket in and of itself is not roi, but when the basket, this is the normal outcome.
For the animal to eat the basket while it's eating the bread, or to gain access to the bread.
It says, the akal v'hadar polis. So he says, he first ate the loaf of bread, and then he swallowed down the basket. So there, it's unusual. But what happened here was that he got to the bread without having to chew on the basket, and then he ate the basket down. What story? Where it says, now question the whole idea. Vat orchehu? Since when do donkeys eat bread? Is it normal for donkeys to eat bread? Verminu. Achla pat, ubasar, vitavshil, mishalem, chatzinezek. If you eat bread, meat, or some sort of cooked dish, you pay chatzinezek. My love, ubehema. We're speaking about a behema over here, a regular domesticated animal. And what you see here is that they don't usually eat bread. They don't usually eat basar. They don't usually eat tavshilim. And you pay chatzinezek. So why are you charging him full nezek for the bread? The bread is not considered to be normal. Lo, b'chaya. Talking about a wild animal. Where it says, b'chaya, basar orcheu. Wait a minute, if you're talking about a wild animal, so bread is not normal for it. Tavshil is not normal, but meat. Wild animals, they eat meat. Where it says, demitave. There's a case where he roasted the meat. So the wild animals eat raw meat, or they don't, but they don't eat roasted meat, because then it's already cooked meat. That's not of interest to them. They're interested in raw, fresh meat. They're not interested in this cooked up or roasted meat. So that's why it was unusual. There's certain chayot, like a deer. A deer is a herbivore. So therefore, for him, basar is unusual. So therefore, if he eats pat, basar, or tavshil, all of those are unusual. And therefore, he's a chayav, chatzi, nezek. We're talking about an animal, a regular domesticated animal, and bread. We're talking about a case with a bread, but the bread was on the table. The bread was on the table, therefore it's unusual for the animal to climb up on the table to eat the bread. So the unusual action over here was not his eating of the bread itself, but rather where he went to get the bread from, and that's why he only pays the chatzi nezek here, even though bread is normal for it to consume. All right. How barcha? Barcha is an aze, is a goat. The chaza lifta apuma de dana. He saw a turnip on the top of a barrel of wine. Sarich. It clawed its way up. It's climbed its way up. Salik achlo. He went ahead and ate the lifta. He ate the turnip that was on top. Vitavre le dana. In the process, he broke the barrel. Chayev de rova lifta vadana nezek shalem. The owner of the goat, he was mechayev him both on the turnip and on the barrel full payment. My taima. What's the reason? Keivan de orche de mechel lifta orche name de tsruche ul misalek.
And therefore, since it is normal for it to eat the turnip, it will also be deemed normal for it to take any action or activity to gain access to the turnip. And that's why he will be chayav nezek shalem both on the turnip and on the breaking of the barrel. This leads the Rashba to question the sheet of Rashi on the previous Amud, which is Rashi said, what was the reason that you're not chayav by the achilat pat of a behema? It's because he jumped up on a shulchan, he jumped up on a table. And Rashi says that's unusual behavior. The Rashba says, what do you mean? The Gemara here shows you that location is not unusual when there's food involved. The animal will do whatever it takes to get access to the food. And therefore, if you say it's a loaf of bread on a table, it would be considered equally normal for it to get access to the bread by jumping on the table as it is for it to jump on the barrel and get the turnip that was on top. For that reason, the Rashba favors the explanation of Torah of the Rabbeinu Chananel, and that is Perish Pituta Pat Pituta Betocha Marak. It's bread that was put into the soup, and that's not normal for the animal to go up and eat that bread that's in the soup, and that's why it was considered to be unusual behavior over here. And so Rashi views the going up on the table as being a shinui or unusual behavior, and you'd be chayav for keren or chatzi nezek. Whereas the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rashba view this as normal behavior to jump on a table, therefore they speak about bread that is similar to the roasted meat that we said before, which is an unusual presentation of the food that makes it that it's keren. But just being on top of the table would be regel, because that's normal, just like we see over here, climbing up on the barrel is normal. The Rashba over here also notes that the Gemara in Shabbat and Daf, Ayin Vav Ben Aleph, says that Al-Chila Yedei Dechak is Lo Shmei Al-Chila. That something that is eaten only in extenuating circumstances, that's not considered to be Al-Chila. Which seems to be a stira to the Gemara that we just concluded, which says that an animal will eat unusual items, and since in extenuating circumstances it will eat those items, it's considered to be ra'uila, and you are chayav nezek shalem. So the Rashba says that there's a difference between Hilchot Shabbat and what we're looking at over here. By Hilchot Shabbat, we're talking about hotza'ah, taking something out into the Reshut Rabim. There, the measure is, do people store items of that quantity? So there, where we say that it's a achila yedei dechak, something that people normally would not eat, yes, they would eat it in extenuating circumstances, but in normal circumstances, they do not preserve or store such an item. And therefore, when you carry it out, it's not considered to be significant, because you wouldn't store it were it not for an extenuating circumstance where you would eat it. Whereas over here, by animals, where they eat it in extenuating circumstances, it's called achila. It's still called eating. Similar to the Gemara in Shabbat, when you eat Ayyadei Achak, it is called Achila, you just won't store items like that. For that reason, we can differentiate and say in the Gemara in Shabbat, you'll be patur for carrying out food items that are only eaten Ayyadei Achak. Even though it's Achila, you don't store them. But over here, you're going to be Chayav Nezek Shalem, because it's considered or deemed to be Achila, Haro'ui La, something that is normal in those circumstances, and therefore, you'd be Chayav Nezek Shalem. Maritz Chayut over here differentiates between Achilat Adam and Achilat Beima, where the Gemara in Shabbat is speaking about Achilat Adam, here we're speaking about Achilat Beima. Okay, we're going to stop here, five lines down on the top of Chof Amud Aleph.